Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 167.
We're actually in a sustained middle temperature now.
Yeah.
That I can deal with.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember there was a Thanksgiving that my mom came. She brought all these sweaters. I'm from Palm Springs. So she brought all these sweaters with shit she could never wear in Palm Springs. And she was so excited, and she arrived, and it's 78 degrees.
Yeah, exactly.
and we literally dined al fresco, and aww. I'm like, I'm sorry, your Thanksgiving did not turn out to be the like cold thing you were hoping for.
Hello, this is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we every day are reminded of the difference between a norm and a law. Just keep being reminded, literally every day. I am your host, Nikki Farsad. And holy impeachment inquiry, you guys, is this really happening? Are we going to uphold the Constitution? I don't know. We're going to talk about it. And we're also going to check in on the 2020 primary race. And finally, we'll ask, should we take money from monsters? This panel, you guys, so excited. I'm joined for the very first time by this woman who I also met at a podcast festival nary a couple of years ago. And boy, was I impressed with her. She is the host of the podcast Bad With Money. She's also the author of that samely titled book, Bad With Money, which, by the way, she's loath to mention, but I am not loath to mention, is a New York Times bestseller.
The YA novel is the bestseller. This one did go into a third reprint if we are looking to brag.
Okay. Third reprint. But what is the YA novel called?
I have 2 YA novels that I've written.
Jesus Christ. I didn't even know this about you.
With my friend Allison Raskin. I have, in 2019, 3 books coming out.
Fuck. Wow.
Thank you.
Well done. You guys, well done to Gabby Dunn.
Thank you. My ex-girlfriend was like, nothing like a manic episode. I was like, woo!
I know. Do you not need as much sleep as the average? I found that people who get a lot of shit done are like, oh, I only need like 6 hours.
No, but it's also awful. Yeah, you're like, oh, I completed all of this stuff, but then I cried for 6 months? What's that about? I don't know.
Right.
It's not great.
Got you.
But I am a longtime listener of this show, by the way. First time guest, longtime listener.
Oh, so excited.
A true fan.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us and for saying that. You guys, the other person in this room is none other than the host of the podcast Blank Check and the star of The Tick on Amazon. And despite its cancellation, we're still extremely proud and I still extremely recommend the viewing of this show. You've heard him here before and you've loved him here before. You guys, it's Griffin Newman. Hey, Griffin.
Hey, I just want to point out in juxtaposition that I sleep a ton and my TV show got canceled. So I'm feeling like maybe Gabby has it figured out.
No. It's not good.
But I also cry a ton. So I feel like we're overlapping.
You finish stuff, but then you're like, I want to crawl out of my skin. I woke up. I took a little bit too much of my antidepressant last night by accident. And then I was up at 5 a.m. and I cooked a whole like breakfast and I was just like, wow. There's no reason. I'm just like thrumming with anxiety. And then I was like, I wonder what that was about. Oh, I see. It's not great.
Right. I mean, has anyone figured out equilibrium?
No, absolutely not.
No, we just haven't.
Nope.
I'm trying to keep this baby I've got in a nice, non-anxious state.
What's that?
She's doing great so far.
Yeah, what are you doing?
I mean, just like feeding her at similar hours.
Being predictable.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then also if she's like, you know, and then showing her love and affection.
Yeah.
I mean, a tough one. A real tough one.
I thought you were going to say like playing soft music and lighting incense.
It's like she doesn't need that. I think she mostly just needs love and affection.
Baby.
And then I play her some songs and we do some karaoke. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
And that's kind of, I think that like, it's like a nice release for her.
Yeah. Babies need.
For me, I'm indifferent.
They need like skin to skin contact.
Yeah,
you have to like hold them.
Yeah.
Because they get dopamines off of it.
And then apparently I also get dopamine.
Yes.
So, because I guess I'm like fond of her. Anyway, so the whole thing's really annoying. All right.
Can I just say what a coup it feels like to be on the impeachment inquiry episode?
I can't believe it. Like, I'm so excited.
You guys,
it feels like
you guys
getting
are
like
so special right now.
Right. It's like getting like a guest spot on the sitcom episode that airs after the Super Bowl.
Right.
You know, you're like, but this one's going to be like watched by everyone.
Yeah. I know. I've already gotten tweets like, can't wait to hear your thoughts. So let us give it to them by getting into topic number one. You guys, thanks to a whistleblower, we now know that Donnie had a call with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, a name that nobody knew before, and it's now the only name that anyone knows. And by some reports, the call was a bit of a shakedown to get Zelensky to investigate Biden, possibly in exchange for a scheduled aid package. And now there's an actual impeachment inquiry in the works. And I say by some reports because, well, it's like, I guess it's a little misleading. But they released not a transcript.
No, notes.
Notes that were taken by like situation room duty guys who like had a voice memo, had their iPhone sitting out.
Right.
Voice memoing and using that the fucking voice transcription feature. What is that called?
Yeah.
I'm saying a lot of words
yeah,
for something
they were
that
like,
should be simple.
They were like, Siri. Record this.
Yeah, exactly.
Speech
and they
to
just
text.
Put
yeah.
that to Donnie's face. And then on the Ukrainian side, there was a guy with his iPhone. So it's not the transcript.
Right, which is, it's being misreported by a lot of news outlets as them saying, oh, this is the transcript. And I saw people being like, no, don't say that because it gives it more weight. It's not
right,
the actual transcript.
But it's still pretty fucking damning.
Yeah.
So first, before we get into like impeachment, what did this call look like to you? How does it read?
The dumbest thing ever. So stupid. Like, I was just like, this is clearly a person who has no concept of like how this is supposed to work at all, or like what is illegal or what isn't. Like, it was just like so weirdly flagrant, but I guess not weirdly because that's been the whole deal with this guy.
Flagrant because Zelensky asked Trump for an increase in military aid
yeah.
Because he specifically wants to get more Javelin anti tank missiles.
Sure.
As one does. And I have some in my apartment.
Right, everybody does.
And Trump was like, and this is well, this is what the notes say. He said, "I would like you to do us a favor, though."
And like the though word there. Favor.
Favor. Ugh. And though both seem to me like, I'll do me this favor and then I'll get you some fucking javelin tanks.
He's not even speaking in like code in any way.
No. No.
That was my big takeaway from the notes was, right, this is how I presume every single phone call with Donald Trump goes. All stories we have heard about him for decades, you know, even prior to him having any political career, were always based around he views himself as this art of the deal master negotiator, and he is so much about his ego in relation to everyone else's success that any single phone call he has is going to be transactional in some way. And it's going to be him trying to figure out how he can come out on top from this deal, how he can gain something or cause someone else to lose something. Mm-hmm. So I don't view this as anything extraordinary other than the fact that we sort of got it. We got right. it like crystallized. And whereas the entire like Russia investigation was trying to like do the postmortem on whether or not those phone conversations happened mm-hmm. months after the fact.
Yep.
It's like the first time we're like starting a cycle having the sort of account of what he said at the beginning and being able to discuss it rather than letting this guy redefine the goalposts
like
for years and years and years.
Right. Like it follows screenplay
right.
like format.
Textbook yes. corruption.
Exactly.
Right. This, we're introduced,
exactly.
this is the first
this
scene of the
one.
New narrative.
Right. right. Yeah. Exactly.
So we get to open the book with
clear.
A very clear, transparent account of this is how he talks to everyone all the time.
Yes.
And talking
totally.
About it being flagrant, it's like he feels like he won the Mueller investigation.
Yeah.
So, of course, he's going to double down. Of course, he's going to be bolder and brasher and less strategic about hiding his intent.
And
you
let
know?
Me just point out another weird thing that I don't know if you guys – I thought this was even weirder. So, the media narrative has really been around Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
But the there were two investigations that Trump wanted the Ukraine to conduct. The other investigation that was not about Joe Biden or his son – was on the unfounded theory that the Ukrainians possessed a Democratic email server.
What? I missed that part. Really?
Wow. It's still about
there's,
the emails?
There's fucking... So, and again, I think there's like a... He has a confusion over how hacking works or whatever.
Yeah.
Because the Democratic... the DNC's emails were hacked, right?
Right.
You guys remember that mm-hmm. whole fucking thing?
A fat guy in his basement.
A fat
right?
guy in the basement.
It was definitely the only person who did that.
And now, and so, but the way that Donnie talked about it was like he thought the Ukrainians like have a server,
right?
Which
right,
looks
right.
like a shoebox on a fat man's bed or whatever, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
So, think someone's in physical possession.
Yeah,
he
thinks someone's in physical possession of the server.
Yeah.
And but I guess he meant like whatever these hacked emails or prove that the Ukrainian did that hacked the DNC.
So he wanted the server itself?
He wants the Ukrainians to conduct an investigation to prove that the Ukrainians hacked the DNC and not Ooh. Russia. He wants to basically point out that it was not Russia.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Because those are his friends.
Right. His friends and also that whole claim is the thing, I guess, makes his presidency
sure.
look weak and I don't know.
I mean, that's so much of the Russia stuff comes down to whether or not, you know, to what degree he colluded. I think it is he doesn't want anything to devalues his victory.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea that he won the election is the most valuable take it to the bank thing.
Constantly.
Right.
The other thing, you guys, is like he kept saying to Zelensky, listen, I'm going to hook you up with Barr. You and Barr can like have a nice chat.
I saw that,
you and
yeah.
Barr can work on whatever. Barr was mentioned repeatedly, mm-hmm. you guys, in this 30-minute conversation. What do you think of that? I mean, what do we do with Barr?
Is he saying he didn't know?
Barr saying nobody contacted me. I don't know anything you're talking about.
I mean, I feel like normally it would be like, oh, there's even like a hint of impropriety, so you should go. But I also believe that nobody ran this by him.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way there was like a chain of communication
right,
that made
true.
Any sort of sense.
No.
I feel like it is like that thing where, like, I don't know. The only thing I'm thinking of is like weird, like high school movies where they're like, just help me get the girl and I'll like hook you up with her sister or whatever. Like, and the sister has no clue that it's going on. Like, that's what it feels like, that kind of weirdness of like just throwing anything in to be like, I don't know, this, is this going to sweeten the deal?
Also, like, you know, let's say Mick Mulvaney was listening to the call or whatever. It's not like he takes everything that happens in these calls and is like, oh, yes, my Lord and Savior Donald Trump is absolutely right. I'm going to make sure that this gets done. I think like 80% of the shit that Donald talks about on these fucking calls, like people willfully like, you know, brush under the rug because they're like, that's crazy. We can't do that. You know? And so I think they just let him talk. And then it's like the secondary people that talk to the Ukrainian president's secondary people. And then that's when the real business starts happening.
Like a general in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But it's also like mafia rule where like it gives him degrees of plausible deniability, which he has hid behind up until now because he never gets his hands too dirty in these things.
Yeah.
He sort of starts the conversation, you know?
Yeah.
But any of the actual nitty gritty that can be recorded, where a transcript can be leaked, always has to happen with another person. Because, I mean, they're, you know, Trump and Giuliani now are fighting so hard to prove, like, there's nothing illicit going on here because there's no quid pro quo. Mm-hmm. We're not explicitly saying we will trade you this in exchange for this. It's two separate thoughts, which is how he operates. He sort of like puts out the basic idea, right? Mm-hmm. He just sort of seeds it out there. And then if they take to it, he throws Barr or he throws Jared or he throws whoever to sort of actually get into the weeds so that he can never really get hit.
Yeah.
You know, and I think he does just say whatever he wants. I mean, from like the first couple of weeks of his presidency, we had people coming out and saying like, well, you shouldn't listen to what he's saying. His words aren't meant to be taken literally. I mean, asking for this Bible-esque interpretation of our president to go like, well, it's like it's allegorical. Like it's not really, you know, like letter of the law. So I think like, look, I don't like William Barr. I would love any excuse for him to be gone. But I think very likely he had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, he was just the next sacrificial lamb.
Yeah.
It was a random name he pulled out of his hat.
Yeah.
But it's also the idea of like, I want those conversations to happen with someone who isn't me.
Right. And but also another name that he mentioned was Giuliani to Zelensky. Like, you'll talk to Barr, you'll talk to Giuliani, which is also weird because Giuliani is his personal lawyer.
Uh-huh.
So then that makes that whole connection extra shady.
Yeah.
And I think... Nope, I forgot it. Go ahead.
I
point off your point, but then I don't remember.
Just that there's like a total mix of personal and which is always happening. Like, I don't even think he thought about it. Like, I think he was like, yeah, Giuliani, my lawyer, yeah.
He doesn't think about anything because he's existed with impunity for decades. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is like a perfect psychological study of what happens to a person who never experiences any consequences for his actions.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, he becomes more and more flagrant.
Yep.
You know, he becomes more and more adept at skirting around with total confidence because he knows that they can never catch him. And he understands just the little loopholes he has to provide himself of not saying, if you look into Biden, we will give you the warheads, to put half a space in between those two paragraphs.
Yeah. But the word favor.
Totally. But that's also like, it's mafia like, stuff. It's like, I'm going to, you know, I'll be nice to you. You be nice to me. You know, he can still hide in the sort of loopholes of that language.
Were you guys surprised by kind of how quickly these notes were released?
Yeah.
I thought that the administration was going to, I mean, because they're damning, right?
Yeah.
And I think the three of us are probably biased on their damning.
Yes.
We could spin it in another direction, but like, I honestly think if we were just like neutral aliens who visited Earth, we would look at this and be like, well, yeah, this looks pretty
damning.
This is
how a shady deal happens.
Yeah, this is like a shady deal.
Right.
I was surprised that they were released. I mean, is there a game plan here?
I think their game plan is just controlling the narrative. It's the thing they've proven themselves most successful at, is screaming the loudest and making the most contradictory points so that it's confusing. I mean, these clips that have been circulating of, like, in one sentence, Giuliani saying, like, we didn't do it, and I did it because it was legal to do, but it doesn't matter because I didn't do it.
Yes.
You know? That it's just, like, say shit, say it loudly, say it confidently. It's Emperor's New Clothes. And the fact that they're putting it out there, I think to them, reads as, we did nothing wrong. If we'd done something wrong, we wouldn't choose to release this of our own volition.
Yeah.
They're hoping that people will fall for that.
It's like on Bachelor in Paradise this season.
Please.
Where Blake and Kaylin were like fighting, and then Blake released all the text messages. And then at the reunion, Kaylin was like, no, you released only the ones that made me look bad. So
yeah, there it is.
Trump is
there. It is
the Trump administration is Blake from Got Bachelor you. In Paradise.
Yeah,
for those listening, who
that makes it very who, clear. Someone yes. tell Nancy Pelosi.
did you folks see that earlier today? The GOP sent out like a 2-page sort of document of talking points.
No, tell me.
Like it was like you know
how to talk about this.
Yeah, like a, as if it was like an actor in an Avengers movie right, getting right, notes right. from Disney. That's like, don't bring up this plot point. Like, sell
oh
this.
God.
Avoid the Scarlett Johansson controversy. Like, it was like that. And it's very sort of like, you know, innocuous, like, publicist document, except it is people encouraging law officials to lie to the people. But they accidentally sent out to everyone on Capitol Hill. On both sides of the party line.
That seems like the craziest
Yeah, this happened
mistake.
Like an hour ago from when we're recording. I just
this.
Saw this happen. But
okay.
But yeah, I mean, people were posting on Twitter, like, I just got this email. And then the next tweet was the screen cap of blank has retracted their email.
Stop.
I mean, they're trying to, like, Gmail unsend it.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
But it speaks to, that's their confidence of just, like, we have the talking points.
Yep.
Here's how we talk about it. Here's how we explain that it's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And even if it isn't nothing, that it doesn't matter. And even if it does matter, that it isn't illegal.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yep.
They're just so ready to distort all of it. Yeah, you found it right here.
Yeah,
yeah. What
yeah.
you need to know.
Basically, it's making the case that what the president actually talked about was entirely proper.
Right.
Trump asked Zelensky to investigate any connection between Ukraine and attempts to interfere with the 2016 election, something he has publicly discussed in the past. He's basically pointing out all of the things that seem innocuous about this situation, right?
Yeah.
And
I also love the expectation that, like, send this out to the Republicans and be like, you guys will all lie for us, right?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
this is our deal now as a party.
So
that's what's creepy about
it. We all
right.
do this.
Right.
Right. And I think, so now that we have an impeachment inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Nancy Pelosi, this is Wednesday, by the way, that while we're recording this, Nancy Pelosi announced yesterday. Where do you think this is going to go?
I mean, I've heard people saying that they're worried that it's going to, like, ruin Democratic chances at beating Trump. But in my mind, I feel, like, emboldened. Like, I'm like, yeah! Like, because,
yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
know, you're losing faith in the Democrats. There was this whole narrative, at least, like, I felt it, too, of, like, ugh, they're not going to do anything. They don't do anything. And I was, like, you know, mad. Obviously, I was still going to, like, vote and go and do all this activism
right, right,
stuff.
Right.
But, like, I was, like, they're just like, you know, lame ducks. And they don't do anything. And then, like, now I'm like, they did something.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
now
yeah.
I'm like, I'll do whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah. Although, how does it make you feel? Because, you know, I point to things like the Equality Act or universal background checks or whatever. There's these bills sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk, like in fact they have done something, but it's like,
yeah.
Either neutered because it's
yeah.
not going to go anywhere in the Senate. And the same could happen with his impeachment, which you can think of as an indictment, right? So there is an indictment now.
Mm-hmm.
But if the Senate doesn't convict, nothing will happen.
Right.
And yeah. how does that make you feel?
I hope that because, you know, it's like this was sent out to all the Republicans and like in the assumption is that they'll all fall in line.
Yeah.
And my hope is that when it gets to the Senate, people like realize that it's not just party lines and like we have to do something to like fix the disaster that our government has become and like the destruction of the democratic system and everything. And like hopefully they will be swayed maybe by their constituents or maybe just, you know, by morals to do the right thing and to not just go by party lines or trying to keep a GOP president by like, but actually like do the right thing so that history will smile upon you.
That's the bigger thing for me. Yeah. Is that like you kind of have to view this big picture. I want to be optimistic and believe that all of this will only work to our advantage. Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in the grand scheme of things, it is the fact that this guy has lived his entire life being able to run away from disaster after disaster, screw over everyone in his line of fire and has succeeded upwards and upwards all the way to the presidency of the United States and couldn't get anything to stick
it's
to him.
Crazy, yeah.
You know, where I feel like even if he's not convicted, even if he's acquitted, it will feel like for the first time there is some degree of accountability in this guy's life.
Yeah.
Which I think, not even karmically, but literally just reestablishing, like, you know, sort of
rules of law and practice.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's the single biggest thing, because I think even if you go like he follows a Clinton trajectory, that does become the overarching headline of Clinton's entire career.
Yeah,
is the impeachment.
It'll mar and define this presidency the way that it should historically.
Yeah, even if he gets to finish out his term, you know, even if God forbid he gets reelected, it still becomes the thing.
What do you guys think about the timing? Like, I don't know how long impeachment inquiries last. I think Nixon's Clinton's maybe lasted 5 to 6 months.
Yeah.
Is that right? And so that puts us like square in the bulls of the, you know, those early primary states. Do you think it has an effect, or I don't know what,
like if it would have an effect maybe on like another Republican stepping up and trying to.
Oh, I mean, because there are. I mean, no, I don't know. I guess would it have an effect on. I guess it doesn't quite matter for our primary election.
I also just
it
feel
just
like
matters for the general election. And then I agree that you're right. It doesn't matter that there's an election happening, and I totally agree with that. But I do feel like there's going to be some sort of sinister effect, and I can't figure out what that is exactly. Just that it would rile up the base for Trump during the general.
But I think it's a double-edged sword. I think it will rile up his base at the same time that it is revealing him, you know?
I mean,
the percentage of voters that we're actually fighting over is so small, you know?
Right.
There is such a percentage of people who are never, ever going to stop supporting Trump no matter what.
Yeah.
And such a large percentage of people who are never, ever going to vote for Trump no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really about that balance. And for me, it's come down to we need to have a good candidate who people can actually be excited about and not someone who they're sort of apathetically accepting.
Right.
Because I think that's the road to ruin for us, you know, on the left. But I think anything that comes out in the wash with an impeachment is going to help and hurt him simultaneously. I mean, he will always be able to turn lemons into lemonade.
Mm-hmm.
He will always be able to turn any controversy into something to rile his base up and to make them hate others.
Yeah.
That's unavoidable. So it's better to actually, you know, hold him accountable to the highest degree and let him do that than to let him do that with innocuous things. Because he will do that over a Sharpie line on a map, you know?
He
will do that over getting Tim Cook's name wrong.
Right.
I mean, things that don't matter, that we're not really putting any energy into.
I forgot about Tim Apple.
Yeah, like, I mean, the amount of time and energy he spent on that, you know, trying to, like, sully the credibility of August journalistic institutions because they reported a dumb thing that he said.
Right.
You know, and he was trying to distort their integrity because of that. It's, like, better to just impeach the guy and let him use that to his advantage. And I think, I mean, the greatest effect that the impeachment could have, I think, is damaging Biden as a candidate, which for me is not a really substantial loss.
Right,
because this issue is so Biden-centric
that
the more they look into his sort of wrongdoings, Trump's wrongdoings, he's going to fight back by redirecting attention to Biden.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which for me, Biden is, I think, a dangerous person for us to elect.
Yeah,
I think he's a dangerous person to give the nomination to.
We'll get into that, guys.
Yes.
In the next topic.
I'm sort of teeing.
Yeah, good work.
Tipping my hat. Yeah.
Well, okay. I mean, let's fucking see what happens.
I hope it sparks hope so that people are more into the Democrat, like helping with the Democratic win. Or like, you know, I hope people, because I have so many friends who are just like, it doesn't matter. He's going to get reelected.
It feels so helpless. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this feeling of like, we're playing like chess 18 steps ahead and they're playing checkers.
Yeah.
Like drunk.
Yeah.
You know, that we're not doing anything because we're trying to like outthink them and they're not thinking and they're succeeding.
Yeah. Right.
The fact that there's like, as you said, like they're just doing something.
Like multiple kids I went to high school with, I would like prepare for exams.
Yep.
Like hours of studying. thing. I would show up, you know, everything was perfect. The pencils were sharpened.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then this fucking clown would just like look over my shoulder, cheat, get an A. And yep. then I was like, oh, what right. is, you know.
And you're like, it works every time. How does it work
and
every
it
time?
Every time.
And you need to kind of believe that those people can get caught.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that the people on the opposite side have hope. And so the other people trying to cheat are like, oh, maybe I shouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it works in both directions.
I also want to just point out real quick for those of us who want to understand what an impeachable crime is. In the Federalist Papers, that's Alexander Hamilton's Federalist Papers, he said it's those offenses which proceed from the misconduct of public men, or in other words, from the abuse or violation of some public trust. They are of a nature which may, with a peculiar propriety, be denominated political, as they relate chiefly to injuries done immediately to the society itself.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, thank you for that, like, slightly more clarification mm-hmm. on an impeachable crime. This feels super in it.
I think injuries to society itself is the exact thing we're yep. talking
yeah, yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's really, you know.
And
that's provable.
This being the least among the injuries.
No, right, absolutely.
But I'm saying this entire presidency.
Right, right. But the, you know, but if we need a tape, as Nixon had,
yeah,
here's a fucking
right.
tape, you know?
Right.
And so this is the smoking gun we've all been waiting for.
And
I
it
think.
Almost helps to have a small piece, to have like one little
yeah, exactly.
tiny thing that you can view as an isolated incident
yeah. and point
and
to
just
it.
Just debate that rather than these like multi tendrilled things
you
we've
know,
been fighting
it's
over.
Like, do you, sometimes you want to read a short story. You don't
yeah.
want to pick up the 500 page yeah. novel, you
I
know?
I just mean you're never going to convince people that he's a rapist. You're never going to convince people
no.
that he's racist because they're that or whatever. But you can be like, well, this is clearly corrupt and not how it works. And maybe
right.
those people can go, ah, that was shady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. You know, fucking finally.
That's the hope.
Right.
All right. You guys, we're obviously going to keep track of what's going on here. Why don't we take a quick break and hear about our sponsors? And then when we come back, we're going to talk about other things.
Today's show is sponsored by Prose. This is kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of Prose custom hair care and skincare, I tried the skincare just recently, is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, like in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. Like I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. Like we've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, like, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or like a less creamy kind? And I was kind of like, I think like less creamy. And they were like, that's fine. Like you can do that. But we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just like harshness. For like many years, because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing, you don't have to take my word for it. In a third party, double blind, dermatologist supervised controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, Prose prove that personalization works better than off the shelf alternatives, which just sort of
totally makes sense on a just logical level if you think about it. Just it makes common sense. Pros are so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at pros.com/fakethenation will be taken off. That's pros.com/fakethenation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's pros.com/fakethenation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So pros.com/fakethenation.
I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until, that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. And we are back. And we're going to do a quick topic number 1.5. Woo! You guys, I'm going to spring on you just real quick, like a 2-minute chat here. Because I felt a pang of guilt walking into the studio that one of our topics was not the climate change summit. So you didn't anticipate to talk about this. And so whatever you say is completely fine.
Sure.
Just lie through your teeth. But I just want to be, the climate change summit is now being completely overshadowed by the impeachment inquiry. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for those of us who heard Greta Thunberg's mesmerizing speech to the UN, I mean, what are your thoughts? And do you feel like there's some kind of a global movement? Does anything feel different?
I thought it was a great speech. I mean, I think it was getting misunderstood where people were like, yeah, why is a child talking about this? But it's like, she's not. She's asking adults to do something. Yeah. And like, that was the clear message of the speech. Like, I thought it couldn't have been clearer.
Yeah.
And people were just like willfully misunderstanding it. I was like, no, she's begging you, the people in charge, to fucking do your jobs.
Yeah.
Which I think is also the thing that has made people lash out at her, is people don't like anything that makes it feel like the pressure is on them in that sort of way. You know, people view her speech as an attack because she is attacking the way we're living.
Yeah, and I mean, and I'm fine with that.
Totally.
Like, that's great.
I mean, someone was pointing out,
attack.
The amount of, like, bad faith people who are saying, like, oh, really? Like, everyone's freaking out about, like, a teenage girl having a mental breakdown. You know, that they're, like, criticizing the fact that her speech is emotional, that she's coming first and foremost as hitting on an emotional level.
Yes.
You know, not trying to throw out stats and numbers and facts, which she knows backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
And she can recite as well as anybody. And everyone has been reciting for decades.
Right.
But no one listens. I mean, they will always find a way to throw out alternative science and distort those facts. So there is something really powerful about cutting through all of that and just having a young person saying, you are ruining my life.
Yeah. Yes.
And the same people who are referring that, who are viewing that negatively as, why can't this girl keep it together? Why is she getting so emotional? Are the same people who were cheering Brett Kavanaugh for speaking his mind and speaking passionately in defense of himself, you know? And it's this thing I hate that I feel like the right uses a lot now, which is like the bully punching you in the face and then criticizing you for crying. You know, why are you crying? Why are you so freaked out right now? Why is your eye black? You know, why are you bruised? And it's like, because you punched me.
Right.
And that doesn't make me weak. To be reacting to your punch.
It's gaslighting.
It's total gaslighting.
It's total gaslighting.
And it's because
global gaslighting.
They know that is the only thing they can do. That there's no other way to combat.
I never understand why we're angry at people who are passionate about what they're talking about, where they cry. Like, whenever it's like
that's
this,
the best thing
it's
in the world.
So fucking weird. Like, it happens where it's like, I just keep thinking, I'm queer, and I just keep thinking about when, like, they're like, well, we allow cis people to write about trans people because they're not biased, but trans people writing about trans people, I don't know, that, like, articles, right?
Yeah,
don't know, that's, like, you know, too emotional or whatever. It should be emotional.
Yeah.
Things should be emotional.
What are you talking about?
Life is emotional. We're human beings.
Well,
we're, like, emotional creatures.
Also, in general, I think, like, in Western societies, but in the United States in particular, we have, like, a very bizarre relationship with people showing emotion. Like, I remember, like, going to a funeral in Iran and people were just, like, wailing. And I was like, this is, wow, you guys tone it down. But then I was like, oh,
someone did die, so I guess I guess this makes sense, you know. And but we just don't like show emotion that way. And I think it's really a cultural phenomenon.
Obama was criticized that's actually when he cried. Right? Talk about Trayvon Martin. I mean, it would come up anytime he got emotional. Right, people would say, you know, he's weaponizing it. It's manipulative. He's
but
using
I
it for political
I was completely moved by her anger, and I felt it. I felt it in my bones.
Totally.
I mean, I'm obviously the kind of person that fucking would get moved, and I care about this issue deeply. But anyways, I just wanted to bring it up, and I don't have any like smart analysis about it or anything, except to say that that happened. Mm-hmm. It's happening. Yeah. It's still a fucking crisis. What are you guys doing?
And kids. I mean, it's been a lot of kids. Like Little Miss Flint is like she's like on the forefront of trying to fix the water crisis. Like it's been a bunch of like
Parkland kids.
Yeah. I mean, it's been kids.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. I applaud them and I want to support them.
I mean,
I want for you guys to tell me what you might be doing for the cause, that I can share with the people of Fake the Nation.
Yeah.
I'm like trying to get this weird thing done where like I get an agency to buy carbon credits for flights or whatever, because there's like a flying heavy business we're in. Anyway, so that's a thing I'm trying to do. I'll keep you guys posted, but my goal is to like start with one agency and then shame the others into
that's
joining
awesome.
And then move over to unions and blah blah blah. So anyway, all I can do is the entertainment business that's not all I can do, but I'm just saying that I was like, oh, what can I do that I'm actually intimately familiar with? And this seemed like some place I could start. So I'll keep you guys posted on if I'm at all successful. Because like, you can calculate your carbon, you know, and carbon offsets, whatever. I know there's different opinions on that, but I'd like to think that it's better than doing absolutely fuck all, you know?
Right.
Totally. And you know, you say it's being overshadowed by the impeachment inquiry now, but it was the nexus of all human conversation for like 72 hours.
Yeah.
And people like us who are already concerned about climate change are now thinking about what more we can do.
Yeah.
And probably it carries on from there down. You know, people who weren't thinking about it are thinking about it for the first time. People were thinking about it a little bit, thinking about a lot. People are thinking about a lot or thinking about it more.
Mm-hmm.
I think it did, you know, it had that effect, because there is just a very clean 2-minute clip of a girl crying, which you either choose to react to like a human being, or you choose to be a sociopath and act like
our president.
Right. That you don't care.
Right.
Right.
All right, you guys. Like I said, hit me up. What are you doing? What should I be telling people? I don't know. I want more ways, interesting solutions from around the country, no matter how local. Please let me know. Let us move into topic number two. Okay, you guys. Okay, holy shit. The elections are right around the corner, by which I mean still over a year.
Right.
Nevertheless, the primary race is heating up with even more rallies and even more steak fries and even more significance put into two states of the union that are not representative of the country as a whole, while willfully ignoring 48 other fucking states. But anyway... let's talk about it. Elizabeth Warren is pulling ahead of everyone, including Biden, in Iowa. What do you guys think?
I love that. Biden, drop out. Go away.
Yeah. Warren is my favorite candidate far and away, and Biden is my least favorite candidate
God,
far
you guys,
and away.
She's like the favorite candidate of every person who comes on this podcast. I wish I brought a more diverse set of views,
but she's
also my candidate, so what are you going to do?
There are other candidates I love.
Faves.
There are several candidates I enjoy.
I would gleefully vote for many of them.
Yes, same here.
For the record.
But she's the
one I will actually vote for.
If you're reading and you're listening and you're watching, it feels like she is the logical best choice.
Yes.
I hate to ask this question because I think it's a bullshit, fucking sexist, shit, garbage question. Is she electable in the general?
I think we don't know what is electable anymore. That's my big takeaway, because we've had two presidents in a row who, by all conventional standards, were not electable.
True.
In very different directions. Two people we were told could never be elected for different reasons. You know? So I think we don't know anymore. And I think when people talk about electable, they talk about electable, you know, a standard defined decades ago that has maybe lapsed now. You know, we have not had a conventional president since George W. Bush. And George W. Bush was just
kind
cusping
of
the edge of electable.
People like, were like, he's an idiot.
Wasn't actually duly elected.
But that's the point. It's like he was the last sort of quote-unquote electable president. Even so, it was like, because he kind of did an okay impression of a normal president.
Yeah.
And his dad was president. And also, his election was a big question mark.
Yeah.
But then we've had two guys in a row who just defy any history, any polling, any data, any stats, you know? I mean, I just remember all the conversations of there's zero way Obama can be elected, but wouldn't it be great?
Yeah.
And all the conversations of there's zero way that Trump could be elected, but wouldn't it be a nightmare?
Yeah.
And we were
yeah.
proven wrong in both counts.
Yeah.
So I just think, you know, it's not even, I try not to think about it because I think we genuinely don't know anymore.
Yeah, yeah, and I think people, I mean, she's lovely. Like, I think there's no baggage history with her, really. I think people like her. I don't really talk to men in general in my life, but like, I don't know how they feel. But like, the idea is what? That men won't vote for a woman? Is that the whole thing?
Yeah. Yeah. As they have not in the past. Although, I mean, I guess viscerally, there might be some kind of different feeling about her versus Hillary. I think the problem when a woman speaks so intelligently and with such like intellectual rigor and plans, like when a woman has plans,
right?
Yeah. I think people feel like they're a school marm. And
we talked about this the last time I was on. That I think people react as if it's their mother scolding them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And or
just
like
people, men react
that way. Not even
their
mom
yes,
scolding,
that's
but
what you
yeah,
mean by
men, like,
yeah,
men react
like,
that way.
There's some kind of like kindergarten school teacher, like, don't put your fingers in that paint.
Yeah.
Well, men don't
happening.
Like hearing women's voices. Men don't
well,
like,
yeah, there's that.
Men don't like a woman talking. They just don't. So, like, that's, and the big part of being president is talking.
But is there like a, do you feel like she's got an edge over Hillary when it comes to that?
Yeah, I think people are a little bit more into her. And also, like, there was that whole fucking thing where people were like, I'm not sexist, I just don't want to vote for Hillary, but if Elizabeth Warren ran, I'd vote for her.
Yeah,
where
so
the
like,
fuck are you
yeah,
people?
Put up or
yeah.
shut up. Like,
yeah.
this is the moment. I also feel like Hillary is someone who has a more sort of complicated past with women, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, she was a candidate who a lot of women felt they could not get behind.
Yeah.
She came with a lot of baggage in that sense. And I also think just the sense that she was someone who was viewed as electable, despite her being female, because she was so part of the machinery. And she was legacy.
Yeah.
And she'd been around for so long.
Yeah.
I think the main thing we're constantly fighting is, like, you know, passion versus apathy.
Yeah.
Because I think the thing we can't have is a president who everyone's going, like, I guess we're supposed to vote for them.
Right. Because with Obama, everyone was like losing their minds.
Right.
Well, you my know friends is, were so into it.
And in the same way as Obama, there will be people who fundamentally will never vote for a woman. In the same way that there are people who we cannot fix who will fundamentally never vote for a black man.
Right.
But what you can do is overwhelm that with people who might not have voted previously.
Who are stoked.
Right. Who are stoked, who will come out in droves, who will campaign.
I think what's really interesting too about Warren is that she's the number two choice for a lot of people. You know, if their number choice is one choice is like, let's say Biden or Sanders or whatever, she's often the number two choice. So she's like a little bit more of a consensus candidate than I think we realize.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think what's interesting about that is that it kind of speaks to this notion, you know, we're really trying to divide the Democratic primary electorate into like progressives versus moderates.
Uh-huh.
But the same person who will vote for Biden and says Elizabeth Warren is my second choice.
Yeah.
That person doesn't give a shit about moderate versus progressive.
Right.
So I think there's something, we're a little less ideologically driven as primary voters than I think we think we're so ideologically driven, but we're not necessarily. And some of these you know, and like watching the debates or whatever, the differences are on the margin. There's two main things that are happening when it comes to healthcare. It's either Medicare for all or a public option.
Right.
And there's all these little skirmishes about this shit on the margins. Nobody's registering that at all. And I think so I think that might be some kind of a difference when we're talking about moderate versus progressive. But ultimately, I don't looking at something like Elizabeth Warren being a lot of people's number two, I don't even think that matters.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. And I also think, you know, hindsight's 2020. And there are a lot of people who didn't like Hillary, had not liked Hillary, and said, look, I don't want Trump to be president, but I just can't vote for her. I just don't want to go to the poll and vote for her, so I'm going to abstain, or I'm going to vote for what's his name, who didn't remember where any country was. you know, and then they woke up the next morning and found out that Trump was elected president and realized
like,
they should have done something.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right, right.
You know, so I think, A, we need to find a candidate who people are more passionate about rather than just accepting of.
Yeah.
And I think Warren fits that bill very well. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think a lot of Biden supporters are people who are trying to do the math, who go, he's electable, right? Because he's been around for a while and he looks like the type of guy who's been president before.
Yeah.
Versus people who I think strongly love him. When I talk to people who tell me that Biden is their first choice, they tend to be older.
And they're being very pragmatic.
And they're being driven by, I just feel like that person's going to get beaten or this person's going to get beaten. And he has the experience.
Versus, like, with Obama, I felt like everyone was like, this is amazing.
Right, this would be historic. Awesome if this happened.
I think that you're right about it being, like, her being the second choice. And, like, I just wish that, like, people would drop out. So that everyone could narrow it down.
Well, guess
and
what?
Like,
Tom Steyer is going to be in the second fucking debate.
Like, I don't, like, why? Like, if you really cared, why?
Why? I know. Tom Steyer, what are you doing? You know who else might be in the second debate? She's very close to getting in, I think. Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard. So, I mean, it's interesting because I think what's interesting is that, like, remember the clown fucking primaries that gave us Donnie, right?
Yeah.
That's the one where, like, every week it was a different front runner.
Herman Cain.
Herman Cain.
My favorite.
What is Aleppo? No, that was, what's his face? That was your guy.
Yes. Why am I forgetting
Gary
his name?
Gary Johnson?
Thank God.
Gary Johnson.
What is Aleppo?
Oh my God.
But no, I think that in that situation, it was like, what's happening with these primaries? Like, it took a long time and it felt crazy.
Yeah.
And whereas these primaries, there's like these clear front runners. I think what's interesting about them, too, is that Sanders is losing ground. And here's a guy, he's like number three in Iowa right now. And here's a guy who nearly won Iowa last time. So how do you explain that?
Fatigue.
Just like we've seen him, we get it.
It's tough. I am a little over it. I have like a weird grudge for how everything went down with Hillary. Mm. And I'm like, look, after Hillary won the Democratic primary, okay, I'm a woman. I'm on Instagram. I post a photo. Let me just set the scene. I post a photo. She's already won the primary. I post a photo of like my new haircut. I happen to be wearing a Hillary shirt in the photo.
Okay.
What follows is not months of harassment from Trump supporters. It's months of harassment from Bernie people. And I've never been attacked by Trump supporters the way that my Instagram was infiltrated for months by Bernie bros for wearing a Hillary Clinton shirt. So, like, I understand that he's, like, good. But when I look at him, I'm just like, whatever it is that is so fucking toxic about your people, like, I cannot deal with that.
I think that's a really good point, that Bernie Sanders might have a bit of a Rick and Morty problem. Where, like, I spent 3 years telling everyone, like, this is the best written show on television. And now I am kind of dreading it coming back because I hate its fan base so much.
Exactly.
And I used to consider myself part of that fan base. But then you see the videos of the guys yelling about the Szechuan sauce and you're like, is this encouraging this? I think you know, it's not the majority of his followers, but the loudest contingent of Bernie supporters are also the worst.
The worst.
The worst.
But even like,
and they're small.
I have like friends who are Bernie fans who are wonderful human beings, but then when they talk about Bernie, it's like they get possessed.
Oh, it's like Charles Manson fucking followers. Yes. They turn into people I don't even recognize.
Right. I know.
And I'm so confused.
Because they're like my friends.
Yes. Right.
And then I'm like, oh, please let's not anyone mention Bernie because then that turns them into something
weird. I am so confused and it makes me nervous whenever a man cultivates that kind of like fervor. It makes me very nervous. I think that that is, I don't know, I don't want to like blame,
but I think something before we get
triggered.
Emails
what?
About from Bernie fans, we not hashtag not all Bernie fans,
we
know.
Oh, email me, it's all Bernie fans, and you can fucking email me at gabrielle@gmail.com.
But it is one of those things where like, you know, not to circle everything back to Rick and Morty, that lead character.
Paradise, bro. Just keep going.
You know, Rick and Morty is a show about a nihilistic genius who's miserable and ruins everything for everyone around him, right?
Yeah.
And the creators of the show have made it very clear that the show is about him being in the wrong.
Yeah.
And the show is about him slowly starting to learn how to be a human being again. And that he is not supposed to be a positive role model.
Right.
And that all these fans look at it and are like, burn down the house, get the sauce, Rick, rub a lot of dum dum. And I think there's that Bernie thing of like, you have people taking the wrong cues from him, which isn't his fault.
Nope, it's not.
But
he seems
also,
like a lovely man
to be
around.
We have seen how much the followers of a president can cause a lot of societal damage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there is that fear of putting the worst Bernie supporters, however small that contingent must be, in a position of feeling powerful by making him the nominee.
Yep.
I also think I
would gleefully vote for him still.
Me too.
Yeah. I would also gleefully vote for him. But I hear
that's the trepidation.
And then I think an interesting, I'm going to call it possibility.
Yeah.
A blindsidedness could happen with Pete Buttigieg because he feels like he could just, you know, he sort of like got more numbers.
Yeah.
You know, he's like in the number four spot, like kind of routinely. He's this mild-mannered dude who like nobody has very much against, right? Like he's a mild-mannered dude that everyone's like, I could get behind that mild-mannered guy.
I feel like the biggest complaints against him are he's clearly not ready. He's too green. He needs to do more of this.
I don't know.
He hasn't built. You have more issues.
I'm in the gay community. I know people think that he was unable to handle police brutality, and he's like, there's a joke that we call him like the first gay Republican president. Like,
there's a thing where
he's like a cop. You know what I mean?
But I think not to make excuses.
I'm reporting from the front lines.
Yes. No, all I was going to say was I do think there is a degree of that's where the lack of experience hurts him because he has not had a long enough political career to form really good stances and histories on all issues. He is much better on certain issues than other issues.
And to me, right. And I think it depends on the voter. But to me, I don't care that you can answer a question nicely and in complete paragraphs.
Yeah. Yes.
I want that should be baseline. Everyone should fucking do that. But like but that's kind of like no one's really paying attention to what he's saying.
Right.
it's more just a temperament thing.
Yeah.
I think you might need to
spend 8 more years in the circuit figuring out how to actually do things.
But also, do a bunch more stuff in South Bend and then let's talk.
But I also think people don't want this mild-mannered shit because my number two is Beto. Because I'm I've become fucking single issue voter about gun control.
Yep, yep.
All I care about is throw them all in the ocean not in the ocean, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Launch them into space, whatever is most feasible.
Space guns.
I hate them all. there's no, like, no.
Yeah,
get
like
rid
that.
Of all
no,
of them.
No, but I like the idea of, like, gun coral reefs.
Yeah, like, melt them
do
down,
that?
Build housing. Like, I don't know.
Sculpture
but, like,
gardens. Let's make.
I hate them so much. And the way that Beto is, like, angry, again, to bring it back to, like, Greta Thunberg, like, whatever. But, like, the way that he's, like, emotional and angry and cursing, like, I feel like I'm, like, okay, this person is a manifestation of how I feel. Like, we're not playing nice. You
100%,
know?
I think the best thing that's been said on the debate stage so far in all of these four or five debates or whatever that we've seen, nights of debates, is, hell yeah, we're going to take your guns.
Yeah.
That was the best moment for me. I was like, America needs to hear that shit. They need to hear that shit. It's fine. It's going to be fine. You still have your Second Amendment rights, but we're going to take away these
AR-15.
Yeah, murderous
weapons. The ones
weapons.
That are, right, exactly.
There's that clip of Kamala Harris on Fallon, too, which is the best thing to ever happen on Jimmy Fallon's watch, where have you guys seen this?
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's all college students. The whole audience is college students, and they all ask questions of Kamala Harris and I don't know whoever the other guest was on the show. You know, Andrew Dice Clay, and it wasn't literally, but someone, a student who clearly was sort of pro guns, said, "What do you think about the you know, the sort of initiative to get rid of quote unquote assault weapons?" And she just responded totally emotionally with, like, this is done. I'm done with it. I mean, her speech ended with, I'm done. But she said at one point, raise your hand if you in this audience have at some point in your, you know, academic career, whether it's in high school or middle school or college, had to go through some sort of drill to prepare yourself for how you would react in a shooting. And everyone raises their hand. Ugh. And she went, that's it. I'm done. I'm done. I'm over. Mm-hmm. And I think we don't talk enough about how Trump's greatest strength as a candidate in terms of getting elected was that he is an entirely emotional candidate.
Yeah.
He appeals to people on an emotional level. So people don't intellectualize what he's saying. And they're willing to overlook the things that they think are objectionable about him because they go, well, he's angry and I'm angry and I want to see that.
Right.
And I think on the left, we want to see that,
like,
too.
Entirely inarticulate
totally.
Anger.
Right. Yeah. But I think we want to see people who feel as strongly as we do.
Well, we have to end that segment there because Harry's looking at me with murder eyes.
I'm sorry.
And let us move on to our final topic. Topic number three. First of all, shout out to Renee in Toronto for bringing us this topic. An MIT professor, Joy Ito, recently resigned when it came out that he courted money from Jeffrey Epstein and tried to keep
it
hidden.
You love to see it.
And guys, oh, I should point out, I've actually met Joy Ito because he was a head of the media lab at MIT, who had like a 2% interest in my work for 5 minutes.
Cool.
And I met him. He's a really nice guy, which says nothing. I just want to say that for the record. If it, mm-hmm.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't know. I have nothing, no real knowledge of him, just that, like, he was part of this thing and he seemed like nice. Anyway, should he have taken this money?
Well, so the reason this has become such a big story is, I'm forgetting the name of the man, but
Lawrence Lessig, the Harvard professor,
who's a friend and associate of Ito's, and wrote a whole blog post sort of explaining it and defending it, which caused a bunch of backlash. And now he has done this interview with the New York Times trying to further explain his points. And a lot of what he's talking about is, I'm not saying any of this is good or bad. I'm just saying this is an incredibly complicated issue, which my overarching statement is, you shouldn't take money from pedophiles. I think that's my my big umbrella.
Noob
that I want.
In 2020.
I want everything to come out from under that umbrella.
Very controversial.
That having been said, I do think, what's his name, Lesser? Raises some good points in terms of how
funding works, right?
And how complex
this issue
is.
I was interested in that.
I'm not saying, well, we should think it over and maybe it is okay to take money from pedophiles. I think what he's raising is, we should be talking about how weird the climate is of funding, especially in academic institutions and scientific institutions, and how limited the choices are, and that it is one of the reasons that people like Jeffrey Epstein have been able to skirt by the law for so long and were able to ascend to such insane levels of sort of societal power is because the people who give the most money often to the best causes are people who are using it to sort of curry favor or cover up you know, throw off their scent.
And just straight up, they have to get rid of it for tax reasons.
Right, there's tax reasons.
They don't, like, to give two shits about the cause.
They're trying to neutralize, you know, like, the carbon footprint of their morality. Or they're trying to create an illusion of a sort of philanthropic spirit or whatever it is.
Because it's public.
But the fact is that most of this money is bad money. Is all of it as bad as Epstein money? No. And the Epstein example is particularly bad because he was arrested and he served and he was a registered sex offender. Mm-hmm. And they knew that. And they were so aware of it that they said, we need to make sure that no one can trace this money back to him.
That's where you lost me.
So there's a big admission of guilt in, I mean, they're not even rationalizing it as, well, come on. I mean, you know, whatever. They knew they were doing something wrong. They knew that people knowing this money was coming from Epstein. And this was years ago when Epstein was not as much of a household name. That speaks volumes, that they knew that that would kill their careers.
Here's my question, though. Gabby, I don't know. There's a little bit of a, like, Robin Hood feeling to me of, like, why don't we steal money from the pedophiles and give it to the poor?
That's the other complicated aspect.
That is complicated.
Why not? Like, he had a shitload of money. He was the fucking worst.
Yeah.
But the media lab at MIT was going to do and does amazing things.
Yes.
And it didn't, and it doesn't matter where the money came from, as, you know, from the point of view of a person at the media lab.
Yeah. I feel that way a bit in my, like, personal life.
Right? I mean,
as a bisexual who dates men, I'm like, take their money. you know, like, well, historically. It reminds me of, like, an ex-boyfriend I had who was, like, kind of shitty and also rich. And he offered to, like, pay for some car repairs for me. And he paid for them. And then when we broke up, I was like, I'm not paying you back.
It's like, not the least glamorous, like, thing.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't
car
like
repairs.
He offered to pay for some
pearls. No, no, no. He covered,
it was,
I mean,
like,
it was
car repairs.
$3,000 of car repairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was like, I'm not paying this dude back.
No,
like, he's got a winter home. Like, so I feel like I do see that side of, like, oh, I don't know. Your parents are the 1%. I'm taking your car money right now.
Right,
like,
well, like, here's a hypothetical that I was thinking up on the way over here that I have no answer for. But I just think it's an interesting thought experiment, okay? So Jeffrey Epstein dies and he has hundreds of millions of dollars, right?
Yeah.
And now, you know, I mean, the his finances are going to be in dispute for years and years and years and years. It is believed that his brother was the next of kin who would be the beneficiary of the estate.
Right.
But also depending on civil suits, perhaps, you know, he's going to have to spend years and years paying out Jeffrey Epstein's victims.
Yeah.
Right. But let's say hypothetically, upon Epstein dying and the money transferring cleanly over to Epstein's brother announced, I'm donating this entire fortune to UNICEF.
Or even more, even more direct, he donates it all to RAIN.
Sure.
Right. I mean, the idea, like the Getty fortune, right?
Yeah.
Like the Getty fortune was turned into something good. It came from oil. After that guy, who I guess what by many accounts was super fucking miserable, dies, and then something good
there,
was done.
There is that question of, like, you know, if people have, if evil people exist, and through that evil they acquire great wealth, is it better to put it into the blood flow of positive things?
Yes.
Should they give it to me
to
repair my
infusion.
Car? Because, by the way, because Joy Ito, by the way, resigned over this.
Yes.
Which to me felt like, look, we put these people in a position where they constantly have to fundraise.
Yeah.
Like, anyone who works for a nonprofit or whatever will tell you the worst part of their job is, like, sucking millionaire dick
the
time.
And no one who's has that amount of money has clean hands. At all. So, like,
I guess it's not impossible, but.
And the whole thing, right, is like with redistribution of wealth from people at the top in order to, like, whatever, socialism, whatever. But, like, you know, that is essentially, let's say, blood money. And then we are like, well, let's redistribute it to you know, make things more equal. Nobody, through taxes, nobody needs to be a billionaire, all this kind of stuff. And it's like, well, but then, so are you not going to take the money because it came from, you don't know where it came from?
Right.
It's yeah. I mean, like, I did one scene in a Woody Allen movie a couple years ago, and
yeah,
then,
this was going to be one of my questions. Okay, Let's hear about your moral, because you had a little regret.
I've spent years spiraling about this, and I sort of torpedoed my life by expressing all my regrets.
You did this scene in a movie, a Woody Allen movie.
Yeah.
Which was, I imagine, fucking crazy when you got that offer, right? Oh my God, I'm gonna be in a Woody Allen movie,
right? And I will admit, I spent, you're an actor, you're struggling, you're failing, you audition for everything, and there's so many things I audition for where I'm like, this is terrible, or I don't like this person who made this, or I think this part is actually harmful for the world.
Yeah, you know? Can co-sign, right? Absolutely.
There's so much of that.
Do the same thing.
Yeah.
There's so much of that. But the point where I got this audition, it was when we were filming season one of The Tick, and for the first time, I was ostensibly kind of a stable actor, which, you never feel stable on the inside of anything.
No.
And who knew if the show was going to continue, whatever.
Right.
But I had, I was like a lead character on a TV show that was about to premiere, and I got this audition. And going through that process, I was mostly just like, oh, wow, it's a crazy audition, what have you, whatever. And then I got the part and immediately felt super conflicted about it. And I had about a month between when they had given me the part and when
shooting.
And, everyone just sort of assumed, well, of course you want the part. There was no discussion of, do you want to do this?
Right.
It was just presented to me as, and they've cast you. And I spent that month essentially just having panic attacks for a straight month.
Sure.
And talking to people about it and having all these complicated conversations of like, well, are you doing anything bad by being in the movie and this and that and da 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 da. And, I ended up rationalizing it to myself mostly, out of the fear of turning down a job, which is a scary thing to do.
So scary.
And the repercussions I thought I would experience from turning it down, which I think would have been less than what I experienced for taking the job and taking, responsibility for that. I think that damaged me more than if I had just quit. But in the moment, the idea of calling up my agent and going, I'm not going to do this movie, felt like they will drop me.
Yeah.
They
depend on your income.
Totally.
And it's just like,
which I'm not saying in any way defend myself, but what I ended up coming around to was, well, experientially, I kind of want to do this. The part's different than what I've done. His movies work in a different way. I'm an actor. I'm trying to learn whatever I want to do this. And I showed up on set and immediately was like, this is the worst decision I've ever made my entire life.
Mm.
The second I was there on set and it was a tangible thing, I felt such intense, like, I felt like, I was in some thriller movie where I'm like constantly like running for my life or whatever.
Oh my
God. The way my morality was chasing me. And about a week or two later, after the first wave of Weinstein stories had come out in the New York Times, I was having a panic attack at 3 a.m. and I just went, fuck it. And I tweeted a whole bunch of things about the whole process and how I felt bad about doing it and that I had donated my salary to Rain. And a lot of people, will criticize me and go, well, you took the money, you took the job, da 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 da. And it's like, well, I took it. I never cashed the check. I directly transferred it over to Rain and I donated more than what I had made on the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So A, that's money I was putting into circulation, if not a substantial amount, because Woody Allen movies don't pay well.
So in a way, you stole from him.
You took the money of a monster and gave it to a good cause.
And it's not like that was any strategy of mine. That was me trying to play catch up for feeling like I had fucked up that badly. But the thing I keep on thinking about is, to a certain degree, I feel an equal, if not greater, amount of guilt for the number of years after reading, the Ronan Farrow, the first New York Times piece she wrote like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Which was the first time she had spoken as an
adult. Oh, the Dylan Farrow piece?
Yes. I'm sorry. The Dylan Farrow piece, the first one she wrote, I think about 2012 or 2013. And I continued to go see his movies, in theaters after that.
Mm-hmm.
And I continued to buy his older films that I liked more on Blu-ray or whatever. And I feel weirdly as much shame for the fact that I was giving him money.
Yeah.
And supporting him and supporting his work and normalizing the sort of sense of, well, if you make good work, you should be exempt.
But I think what's interesting about your story and also this MIT story, and climate change.
Sure.
The three of these phenomena having come is that it's not you that's the problem. It's the institutional pipelines, right?
Yeah.
Like, you are not holding up Woody Allen's morality. Joy Ito is not holding up Jeffrey Epstein. Like, you know what I mean? You guys are just part of a system that's been put in place by film studios.
Totally.
Studios that are the ones that looked away. It's not you that looked away. Right. You had no power. Right.
And it's like, I take responsibility.
Joy Ito is not the one that was like, this department needs money. It was set up that he had to constantly beg for
money.
And
also the question of, if you don't take the Epstein money, maybe there's not money of that size that is going to come to you. You might not hit your funding goals.
Exactly.
Right.
And I think you're put in such an and it's so funny because MIT is a like slightly more macro example.
Sure.
Yours is the micro example.
Yeah.
But we're all struck with this, I think, especially when you're an entrepreneur, when you're doing your own thing. Like there's stuff like that happens all the time.
The flip side to me is that you take the money from Epstein, and Epstein believes he's legitimized. He believes he's a legitimate person. He believes that he can work and move in these circles. And so he's further emboldened. And his victims feel that he is further emboldened and further untouchable. And it is a co-signing of the continued relevance and power of this person
to take
their money.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, Lessig sort of says, well, you know, it wasn't like he was asking us to put his name on a building. It wasn't like we were hanging up plaques of him.
But in his mind.
Of course, that's the thing. It was still the same transaction.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like you're doing moral money laundering, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's reintegrating himself into high society, you know?
He gets to go around and maybe, I mean, I'm spitballing. But maybe he says, oh, I'm a high donor at MIT.
Right.
Get me more girls. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you don't know what happened.
But even if not that, even if it never crossed over into his, you know, sexual life.
Right.
So much of Jeffrey Epstein's currency was his standing in society.
And so when you co-sign that, when you allow him to give, when you allow him to continue to do that stuff, he walks around with impunity, same as what Griffin said about Trump.
Yeah, and you see the sort of, you know, the attendance records of all the dinner parties that Epstein held after getting out of jail. And
which is lunacy.
Which is lunacy. And you look at all the people who are on that list, you go, this is absurd, are all of them in on it? And the reality is, no, a lot of them were not in on it. A lot of them were probably playing willfully naive. But a lot of them were lured because they're friends with people who say, oh, he's good, he gives money to this stuff or whatever.
Yes, right.
You know,
that's
what he was buying his way back into.
That is my fear.
Insulation.
He bought himself back into polite society. It worked.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So for me, I like, you know, my whole Woody Allen takeaway was like, I don't feel like I'm empowering him, but I feel like I am in my own small way contributing to the cycle of him continuing to exist with total impunity, which for me, even though I understand that it is so much about the larger kind of machinations of show business that put me in that position where I compromised my values in that way, the overriding thing was I feel like a hypocrite because I would judge someone else for doing this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. By the way, I never finished my three-parter, which is what you and MIT and climate change have in common, which is that, which is like climate change isn't about me having cloth napkins, right?
No.
It's about intergovernmental diplomatic action on a fucking really grand scale.
Yeah.
That said, I schwitz every time I use single-use plastic, right?
Yeah.
Even though I'm not the one, but I'm not. I know all of the complicated feelings.
But it's that balance of, like, you want to do whatever little thing you can, but you also understand that the real things that are going to move the needle are so far above us, and you don't understand how to actually change those
and
things.
And it's unfortunate because you don't know what the, like, with the actors, you can point at the actor and be like, I know you, I saw your face, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I don't know the name of the studio head. If I'm, like, an average person trying to cancel someone.
Giving them money and bankrolling them and developing them and all those sorts of things.
I don't know the name of the person who
they know is the girl who wore the Hillary Clinton t-shirt in her Instagram feed. That's all they fucking know.
To Canceled and Back. That's the name of my memoir. You can't cancel me. I've been canceled. I'm back. I've been canceled again. I'm back. Uncancelable.
You guys.
You see?
Well, maybe. I don't know.
You guys.
Griffin's experienced it.
Yeah.
We have to end the show because Harry over here wants us to get the
fuck
out
of the
studio. I asked at the end of every show, how do you guys feel?
Like, in general?
I know.
I feel like I need to read a lot more about how impeachment works. And I feel hopeful that maybe this will cause, like, younger Democrats who were feeling like, oh, like, they don't ever do anything, so why should I bother to vote? Why should I bother to campaign or whatever? That they'll be like, oh, okay, like, there's movement.
Yeah.
I hope.
There's movement.
The weird thing with movement, especially when it's, like, actually talking about and tackling these big subjects that have sort of been undiscussed for so long, is it, like, feels terrible and fantastic at the same time. You know, there's a reason we try to avoid staring these things straight in the eye, like climate change or like, you know, positions of power with abusers or any of these things. The idea of impeaching Trump, because it just feels like we don't want to get our hopes up that things can be good. We don't want to spend too much time thinking about how bad things actually are. We try to find a balance between the two. But it does feel like, I mean, all the subjects that came up in this episode today are examples of the dialogue actually being forced to continue, which is a net positive, even if sometimes it feels like stressful and maddening. It is a net positive.
I love that. Thank you. All right, you guys. I want for people to be able to follow you and all of the shows that you were on that have been canceled.
Sure. Oh, God, so many.
I've been literally canceled. Yeah.
To canceled and back.
Yeah. To canceled and back. Gabby, where do they follow you?
I'm at Gabby Rode on Instagram and at Gabby Dunn on Twitter. And I guess I said my email address.
And please subscribe to our podcast.
Oh yeah, subscribe to Bad with Money and get the Bad with Money book. This comes out Thursday. Oh yeah, I got a graphic novel coming out October 8th.
Oh,
you should get that.
Get it.
And it's called Bury the Lead. It's out from Boom Studios, and that's, like, my latest thing.
Nice. Griffin?
Griff Lightning on all social media platforms, although trying to spend less time on social media for my own sanity.
Mm-hmm.
Blank Check Podcast, which I host with David Sims of The Atlantic, where we pick a director and go through their whole filmography when they sort of get blank check status and get to make crazy, crazy movies. So we're finishing up going through all of Hayao Miyazaki's filmography right now. And then starting Jonathan Demme in the next couple of months.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah.
Excited about that. Yeah, and then the ticket's still viewable on Amazon, at least for the indefinite future. And I'm proud of it. Even if it's done, I want people to watch it.
You guys know where to find me and all the things. But what I really want to point out is that people have been emailing me about the bike lane conversation we had and making cities more, you know, hospitable to bikes. And I have been getting a bunch of great messages as far away as New Zealand.
Whoa.
With people in New Zealand really angry at scooters. So not our listener. Our listener loves scooters. It's like they were showing me posters of people who spent the time to put up posters that were angry about scooters.
That said, like,
what?
Don't scoot here?
Take our scooters or not. These streets don't belong to scooters. Shit like that. I don't remember. But anyway, I also want to point out, for people who live in Charleston, South Carolina, I got an email from a listener about the Ashley River crossings. They're trying to build bike paths. There's some resistance to actually allocating the funds to get it done. So if you live in that area and you care, please go to charlestonmoves.org and look up the Ashley River crossings and what you can do to kind of get your local representatives to make that project happen. I know that's like hyper local to those people, but I don't care. I just get excited that there are these things happening around the country and I want them to happen. And it makes me just excited that there's movement on them. But what I really want to do is I want to thank the team here at Fake the Nation. That's our producer, Harry Nelson, our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens, Gabby Alter wrote our theme music, Lily Fleshler helps with research. And you guys, you know, we love to hear from you. Send us your feedback, topics we should be chatting about, guest ideas. You can leave us a voicemail at 347-770-4988. Or drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. And if you like what you hear, please leave us a review at Apple Podcasts because it really does help people find the show. And oh my God, you guys are great. I will see you next week in your ears.